So here's where Lisa is. 4 months out from the divorce, she has done the work. She called people. She showed up for things. She ran the three-step machine from episode 3, and it worked. There's a rhythm again. Friends she had lost track of came back. New people came in. Her circle, the wider one, is real now in a way it hadn't been in years. And she notices one more tender thing, the kind of thing that doesn't show up until the rest of the noise dies down. The very closest ones still feel thin. Her oldest friend, the woman who knew her before she was married, before she was anything but herself. That bond has a kind of quiet distance in it now that wasn't there before. Her sister, who she used to call every week without thinking, calls less. Lisa calls less, too. The warmth is there, but it's like a fire that's gotten low, and neither of them has said a word about it out loud. Here's the thing about deep bonds. They take the hit hardest because they're the ones you lean on most. When a long, hard stretch comes, a divorce, a loss, a season of just being underwater, you don't stop talking to the people on the outer edge of your life. You stop talking to the people closest in. You pull into yourself right at the center, which means you pull away from the very people who were the center. And because those bonds were deep, neither person quite knows how to say, "This has gotten thin, and I miss you, and I don't know how we got here." So that's what this final episode is about, not the wider circle. You've already rebuilt that. This is about the closest few. The one or two who are supposed to be your, no matter what. How a hard season damages that bond most, and how to rebuild it on purpose. Let's name what actually happens to a close bond during a hard season. Because once you can see it clearly, you stop blaming the other person, or yourself, and you can actually fix it. A close bond is built on two things. The first is real knowing. You know this person's history, their patterns, what they're actually afraid of. The second is time that costs something. Not just hanging out, but the kind of time where you were there for hard things, where you showed up when it wasn't convenient, where you paid a real price to be present. That's what makes a bond deep rather than just warm. Now here's what a hard season does. You get pulled into your own survival. You stop having the time that costs something because you're spending every bit of cost you have just getting through the week. And you stop being known. Because you're so deep in your own hard thing that you can't open it up to another person. You go quiet right where you used to be open. You go absent right where you used to be present. Weeks pass, then months. And the other person, who loves you, doesn't push because she knows you're going through it and pushing feels wrong. So she pulls back a little too to give you room. And now you both have. Neither of you meant for the distance to grow. But it did. And here is the hardest part of rebuilding a close bond. Unlike the wider circle, where a friendly wave from across the room starts things moving again, the closest bond doesn't respond to small talk and group brunches. It got damaged by going quiet and going absent. The only way back is through the same two things that built it. Real knowing and presence that costs something. Here's where most people get stuck for months, sometimes years. They feel the distance in the close bond. They miss the other person. They want to rebuild it. And they wait. They wait for the other person to reach across first, and the other person is doing the exact same thing. She feels the distance. She misses Lisa. She wants to rebuild it, and she's waiting for Lisa to reach across. So, you have two people who both want the same thing, and neither one is moving, and the gap just keeps sitting there. Why does this happen? Because the deeper the bond, the more it costs to say the honest thing. With someone you barely know, a small reach costs almost nothing. You have nothing to lose. With your oldest friend, your closest person, the reach costs everything. Because if you reach, and she pulls back, That means something real. The risk is real. So the brain does what it always does with a real risk. It stalls. It says, wait a little longer, see if she reaches first. And she's running the same stall on her end. Nobody has to be cold or afraid or even wrong for this to happen. It just takes the depth of the bond itself to freeze both people in place. This is the trap, and it has a name in the research on close relationships. When two people who care about each other both go quiet, waiting for the other to go first, the gap doesn't stay the same size. It slowly grows, because time passing without contact starts to feel like a signal, and then both people start to wonder if the other person doesn't miss them as much as they thought. Silence reads as a message even when nobody meant to send one. The only exit from this trap is the same one that runs through every episode of this show. Somebody has to go first, and it might as well be you. Let me take the hardest version of the doubt head on, because it's the real one and it deserves a real answer. The worry isn't just, what if she doesn't respond right away? It's what if I reach and she's moved on and the bond I thought was deep was only deep on my side? That fear is real. It can stop a person from reaching for months. And I'm not going to tell you it can't happen, because it can. Some bonds really do end during a hard stretch, and not every relationship that went quiet comes back to full life when you reach. That's true. Here's what's also true, though. Research on what happens when people reconnect after a long silence in a close friendship, the kind of close friendship that was real before it went quiet, shows that in the large majority of cases, the person on the other side has been carrying the same quiet missing. They weren't moving on. They were waiting in the same stall. And here is what does not happen. Reaching honestly almost never makes things worse. A cold shoulder after a real honest reach is rare. What's common is that the other person says, I've been wanting to do this for months, or some version of that. The reach doesn't have to be perfect. The door doesn't have to open wide the first time. One honest move breaks the freeze, and then you can actually talk. And here is the version of the worry I want to leave with you. The deepest risk is not reaching. Every week you don't reach is another week of silence that reads as a message. The gap does not wait for you. It keeps growing on its own. The reach feels dangerous. Not reaching is the thing that's actually dangerous. Go first. So let's get practical, because this is the moment in the show where we move from understanding why to knowing how. The books give us a clear picture of what a close bond actually needs when it's gone thin, and it's simpler than most people expect, though not easy. The first thing is honesty about the gap itself. Not a long speech, not a rehearsed apology, just naming it out loud. I know we've been quieter than usual. I've missed you. I don't totally know how we got there, but I want to come back. That's the whole reach. It doesn't need to be explained or justified or fixed right that second. It just has to be said. There's a reason this matters so much. Research on friendships that go distant and then come back, and this is worth knowing, finds that the act of naming the distance is often the entire repair. Not a long conversation about what happened, not an accounting of who called less, just saying, there's been a gap, and I felt it, and I miss you. That one sentence does more work than anything that comes after it. The second thing is what I'd call a costly show. A costly show is presence that asks something real of you, not a quick text, a call you set aside real time for, a drive you wouldn't normally make, showing up for something that matters to her even when your own week is full. The cost isn't about suffering, it's about signal. It tells the other person, you're not a casual priority. You're the kind of person I actually rearrange things for. And because that's what deep bonds were built on in the first place, it's exactly the signal that wakes them back up. Name the gap. Show up with cost behind it. That's it. That's the whole repair. Let's go back to Lisa. She has the phone in her hand for 3 days before she uses it. Every time she picks it up to call her oldest friend, she puts it down again. The conversation in her head sounds too big. She's imagined some long reckoning where they talk through everything that happened, where she has to explain the divorce, where she accounts for every month she went quiet. That conversation feels enormous, and she doesn't have the energy for it, so she puts the phone down. Here's what she finally does. She calls on a Tuesday morning, and when her friend picks up, she says 6 sentences. She says, "I've been wanting to call for so long, and I keep losing my nerve. I know I disappeared into my own stuff for a long time. I've missed you. I don't need to rehash everything right now. I just wanted you to hear that you matter to me, and I want to come back." Her friend is quiet for a beat, and then she says, "I've been waiting for this call for 6 months." That's it. That's the whole call. They don't fix everything. They don't talk for hours. They make a plan to see each other in 2 weeks, but the freeze broke. And what Lisa notices in the days after is something she hadn't expected. Her own jar felt fuller. Not because her friend did anything for her, because Lisa did something for her friend. She gave the reach. She went first. And giving first, the way the books talk about it, is what puts something back in the jar. The thing you're most afraid to give to the people closest to you is the exact thing that fills the center up again. I want to hold here for a moment, because there is something that can happen when we hear a story like Lisa's that I want to head off. It's the move where we turn it back on ourselves. Lisa could do it because she's brave. I would mess it up. I'd say the wrong thing, or I'd pick the wrong moment, or I'd cry and make it weird, or she'd be busy and I'd feel rejected. Here's what I want you to notice about all of those thoughts. Every single one of them is about you, your performance, your risk, your potential embarrassment, and that framing has the whole thing upside down. The reason this works, the reason naming the gap and showing up costs something is enough, is that it's not about delivering a perfect speech. It's about what the other person feels when she hears it, and what she feels is, "I matter to this person. I was missed. She came back for me." That feeling has nothing to do with whether you cried or picked the right words or called on the right day. It's the act of reaching that matters, not the performance of it. This is the same turn that runs through all 5 of these books when you look at them together. The reason people stay lonely, stay distant, stay stuck, it is almost never a failure of character or warmth. It's a built-in trap, the trap of waiting, the trap of performing, the trap of making the other person's experience about your own comfort. The books don't fix you because you are not what's broken. The books name the trap, and once you can see the trap, you can walk around it. Lisa wasn't braver than you. She just stopped waiting and went first. That's the whole difference. Let me bring the jar back in here, because this is where it goes deepest. We've talked about the jar across this whole show, the thing in the middle of a group of people that everyone can put something into and everyone can draw from, and it stays full because it belongs to all of them together. But there's a smaller jar too, and it's the one that matters most. It's the jar in the center of a close bond, just 2 people. And that jar works exactly the same way. It gets filled on both sides. It doesn't run on performance. It doesn't require one person to always give and the other to always take. When Lisa made that call, she put something in. When her friend said, "I've been waiting 6 months," she put something in. The jar between them got fuller from one single exchange, not because either of them performed it well, but because both of them were honest. 2 people who are each willing to go first for each other, that bond almost can't run dry. Because every time one person is low, the other reaches. Every time one pulls back, the other leans in. That's not a perfect system. There will be times when both of them are low at once and the jar sits quiet for a while, but they've named it now. They've broken the freeze, and naming it is the thing that means neither of them will go quiet for months again without the other knowing something is off. A jar with two honest people tending it doesn't run out. It doesn't require either of them to be the well. They just take turns reaching. That is what a close bond actually is when it's working. Two people who go first for each other, all the way in. So here is your one thing this week, and I want you to notice that it is a give, not a grade. You are not being asked to rate your bond, or test the other person, or see what they do before you decide how much to offer. You're being asked to give something first, before you know how it lands. Pick the one person who is, or was, your closest, the one where there's been a quiet distance you've both been carrying without naming, just one person. And give them one real reach this week, not a text, something with a little more weight to it, a call where you set real time aside, a message with the actual sentence, "I've missed you and I want to come back." Or, if you're ready to show up physically, the drive, the visit, the showing up for the thing that matters to them. The reach doesn't need to be long or polished. 6 sentences, the way Lisa did it, is more than enough. The only rule is that you go first without waiting to see what they do. That's the give. You're not giving money. You're not giving a favor. You're giving the reach itself. The thing that costs you most with the people who matter most. And this is the full circle of everything this show has been building toward. You started episode 1 without a circle at all. You named the project. You cleared the dread. You learned to give first in the wider world. You ran the 3-step machine. You rebuilt the wider ring. And now you close the center, the very inside of the jar where the closest bonds live. That is not a small thing. That is a whole life rebuilt, one reach at a time. Give the reach this week. That's everything. So look at what this whole show was. It started with Lisa in a crater, a divorce, a circle gone quiet, the specific kind of alone that comes when a long closed life suddenly breaks apart. She named the project, even when naming it felt strange. She cleared the dread that said people wouldn't want to hear from her. She learned to give first, before she knew what would come back. She ran the 3-step machine and rebuilt the wider ring, one by one. And now, in this last episode, she went to the center, the very closest bonds, named the gap, went first, and felt the jar fill from both sides. That is the whole thing. Not a set of tactics, not a self-improvement system. A way of living that makes everyone in the circle needed and keeps the center full and means no one, not Lisa, not the people she loves, not you, has to wait alone in a hard season hoping someone notices. You are not broken. You were never broken. You are running a shape that drains people in a world that mostly still runs that shape. Now you know a different one. It's open to you, starting this week, with one honest reach, watched over, as always, by Daisy. Thank you for building alongside me.